This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, a preview of the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. African heads of state converge in Washington for the second U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in this capital city, this time under the auspices of President Joe Biden. The summit, which takes place from December 13 through the 15th, aims to demonstrate Washington's long-term commitment to Africa and strengthen cooperation on shared global priorities, such as climate change, food security, and democracy. The communications director for Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera told my colleague James Buddy, host of Daybreak Africa, that African leaders are looking to strengthen trade relations with the United States, especially in the context of the African Continental Free Trade Area. According to a statement from the African Union, quote, the first U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit was held in 2014 under President Obama's administration, announcing and engaging new private sector commitments to invest and partner with African countries on initiatives in energy, financial services, climate change, food security, and healthcare, among other areas. This year's summit is expected to prioritize similar issues while placing an even greater emphasis on bilateral trade and investment initiatives. The summit will include new initiatives to increase U.S. engagement with the African Continental Free Trade Area, as well as initiatives to boost the continent's recovery from COVID-19, bolster food security, and promote investment in infrastructure, health, and renewable energy projects, among other priorities. The forum will also include interactions with civil society, multilateral meetings between President Biden and African heads of state, secretary and cabinet-level meetings for trade, energy, and diplomacy, and a collection of industry-focused meetings under the purviews of the U.S.-Africa Business Forum, unquote. African diaspora communities in the United States will also play an important role in the summit. So for more on U.S.-Africa relations, as we preview the significance and promise of the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Joseph Sani is vice president of the newly established Africa Center at the U.S. Institute of Peace. Previously, he provided technical leadership in the design and implementation of peacebuilding and civil society development programs in several countries in Africa and Asia for the FHI 360, which stands for Family Health International, which is a leading human development organization based in the state of North Carolina. And Ambassador David Shin. He's former ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso, now professor of international affairs at George Washington University, and a frequent panelist at these VOA microphones. And both gentlemen join us via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for having us.
So let me begin with you, Ambassador Shin, to talk about the summit objectives and the value of these types of, you know, high-level summits. What do they achieve, and what do you expect this one, happening so many years after that first one in 2014? What are the expectations from the point of view of the United States and Africa?
I think in many ways, the key themes this year are very similar to those in 2014. There will be an emphasis on the role of the private sector, especially when it comes to trade and investment, because the private sector determines what happens in Africa in both of those fields. There's relatively limited role for the U.S. government other than institutions like the Export-Import Bank that can assist trade. But it's really the private sector that will drive it. The other key theme, I think, will be the emphasis on young leaders, which took place during the Obama administration and has now been continued and to some extent revived in the Biden administration. I think you're going to see a lot of focus on young African leaders.
Turning to you, Joseph Sani, over at the U.S. Institute of Peace, what would you like to add or subtract to the themes of this particular summit, and why do you think it will be significant or not?
I think, as Ambassador said, I will just add to the credit is that the summit touches a vast areas of key priorities for African countries, right? But beyond those priorities, I think the summit offers opportunity for African countries and the U.S. to press the reset button in the relationship. I think following the U.S. sub-Saharan strategy, the tone was set that the United States considers Africa as a geostrategic partner. And this summit is an opportunity to actually operationalize what that means. In addition to the bilaterals, unlike in 2014, during this summit, African countries have the opportunity to dive deeply into the AU Agenda 2063, which is a roadmap, a 50-year plan for Africa development, built by Africans themselves. So this time around, Africa are bringing something to the table, and that's a huge difference.
I'm glad you brought that up, Joseph Sani, Africa 2063. Briefly, before I turn over to Ambassador Shin, what are some of the major highlights or objectives for Africa 2063? And what do you think they're going to be trying to achieve for that agenda at this summit?
The AU Agenda 2063, it is a 50-year plan, has contained in it some of the flagship projects that the pledges the Biden administration has already made fit into. So, for example, the African Free Continental Trade Area is one of the flagship projects. And so when we say the African Continental Trade Area, it's part of those flagship projects. And you have additional projects such as the high-speed railway with the Biden administration pledge of $200 billion to the Global Partnership for Infrastructure, that pledge could be leveraged to actually address that flagship project. So the bottom line here is that the 15 flagship projects in the AU 2063 agenda could constitute the basis of moving this partnership forward in concrete terms. I don't think African countries are coming here to listen to new pledges. I think they are looking for ways and concrete mechanisms to realize the commitments that have already been made during the COP 26, 27, and during different conferences as well.
Thank you for that. Ambassador Shin, you mentioned that the emphasis will be most likely on the private sector, and it looks like that is the case. But there are other sectors. Certainly, there's the whole issue of climate change, supporting developing countries such as those in Africa and around the world, the commitment by the developed world to help these countries because they are victims, you know, of the developed world's use of, you know, greenhouse gases and so forth. Climate change, the prevention of pandemics, dealing with the residue of COVID-19, which is, I assume, still having an impact on the continent, if not as much as it did before. How do you see those two themes as well?
I think many of these other themes are going to be covered in two ways. One, I think the administration is going to be, I hope, in a listening mode from the Africans and hear what they have to say, what their concerns are about some of these important issues that don't otherwise get an enormous amount of attention. The other side of it is a whole series of side events that will be taking place in the Washington area, local universities, think tanks, business organizations, etc., that will involve a fair number of Americans on the outside interacting with those who are taking part in this summit. And that, too, will be a good opportunity to hear what is on the mind of the Africans, hopefully to come to some mutual agreement on some of the issues. And in terms of American business, perhaps strike some deals in the process. Well, this is a very wide-ranging kind of event that's going on in Washington. It's not all going to happen in one room, just involving the leaders of the African delegations and the key members of the administration. There will be a lot going on around town.
It does sound like a terrific opportunity, and I think relationship building certainly is very important. This face-to-face meetings, Joseph Sani, would you not agree? And also, I'd like you to comment on what you think can be achieved on this issue of climate change, how it's having deleterious effects in Africa, helping Africa cope with the consequences of climate change and also shifting, you know, to cleaner energy, as well as, of course, this question of preventing future pandemics.
These kind of meetings are important in terms of relationship building, that for sure. And then we have many events in town. At USIP, we are hosting a series of events, and then other organizations are also hosting a series of events and meetings important to strengthen those relationships, to redefine the nature of the partnership at the bilateral level and also at the continental level. Now, regarding the issue of climate change and pandemic, I mean, global shocks, I think, and then we hope that both African countries and the United States will find mechanisms to strengthen the resilience of African countries to those shocks, be it pandemics and climate change. Let us not forget that the United States has already invested a lot, was very supportive during COVID and also helping African countries face this pandemic. But African countries, I would suspect, will expect not just handouts, but really a deep reflection on the type of technological innovations and technology transfer and capital and access to capital to allow those countries themselves to build the systems, the infrastructure to deal with these shocks, not to wait for handout when the shocks happened. So from what we are hearing, it's more than just, again, pledges in terms of dollars, but really mechanisms to make sure that they have the necessary tools to deal with those shocks when they happen. So building the resilience of those countries. I think that would be a great outcome if this summit can generate that. It's less about the pledges, but really the kind of the mechanisms, the infrastructure, the agreements to allow African countries to deal with those shocks themselves.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Joining me via Microsoft Teams are Joseph Sani. He's Vice President of the Africa Center at the U.S. Institute of Peace, from whom you just heard, and Ambassador David Shin, former U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso. We're discussing the challenges and opportunities for strengthening ties between the U.S. and African countries as we preview the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit next week in Washington. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on our website at voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also find it among your favorite podcast apps. You may also connect with us via Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel and on Twitter at Carol_Castiel. Here's a shout out to a loyal Facebook follower, Kanjindo Biemba from Solwezi, Zambia, who lives in Shanghai, China. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, China, David Shin. Speaking of China, I'd like to ask you about that, because while many of the members of the administration who are preparing this summit talk about, well, this is not about, you know, combating or countering China in Africa. This summit isn't about countering Russia. But in the background, there's still that concern, is there not, David Shin? I mean, we're never going to, that is, the United States going to compete in terms of the amount of business China currently does with African states. But to what extent is this summit also important in showing Africa that America is very engaged and, you know, wants to be a player and is a player and can do a lot of things perhaps better and more advantageous in the long run for the continent?
Well, it's interesting in that the magazine Foreign Policy did an article recently which commented on the fact that one of their reporters had apparently seen an advanced copy of the agenda for the summit, and there was not a single mention of China in it. And there has been a great effort, I think, by the administration and its briefings about the upcoming summit to leave China totally out of the discussion. So if you based your view on that, China is not an issue at all. But of course, we all know that it is. And the fact that China does play such a large role in Africa today does have an impact upon what the United States is doing there. But I think it is nevertheless good policy by the United States not to put it in that context. It's better to leave China out of the discussion and let everyone draw their own conclusions about it. It's interesting. I was reading an opinion piece in Global Times, which is basically the official mouthpiece of the Communist Party of China. And it was absolutely trashing the upcoming summit here in Washington about the objectives being nefarious and not being a sincere effort, and that China's FOCAC meetings are so much more attuned to African needs, et cetera, et cetera. But it's interesting to note that at the last FOCAC meeting in Dakar, Senegal, in November of 2021, President Xi Jinping gave his remarks by videotape from Beijing because of COVID-19. So at least Joe Biden is meeting with all of these people in person in Washington. And I think that the summit itself is going to have a considerable amount of substantive value for Africans.
How do you see China in the backdrop, Joseph, as well as Russia, especially given Russia's very malign activities, one could argue, you know, in supporting this Wagner group, unfortunately partnering with some of these terrorist groups in the Sahel? How do you think Africans, you know, are viewing these relationships and what they're looking for from the United States?
Yes, I think just to say that most African countries desire a good relationship with the United States and China. I mean, I think because those two giants complement when it comes to African needs, particularly on infrastructure and technology. So they don't want to, I mean, there is this African saying that goes, when two elephants fight, the grass suffers. And this time around, African countries do not want to be that grass. So having said that, though, I will give credit to the Biden administration. I mean, they did not make this summit about China. People may have their own interpretations. They made it about Africa and the African-U.S. relationships, which is a smart move. It's important to note that the United States will be wise to pit with strength. And the strengths in Africa are the values we share with African citizens, at least. Those values of democracy, human rights, transparency, accountability, the rule of law. That's a strategic advantage that the United States has because African citizens also share those values. And number two, the U.S. technological advantages. China is proposing to Africa 20th century technology, and Africans are aware of that. So if you go, you take issues of fintech, biotech, climate tech, all those things that are attractive to African youth and that African country needs, I think the United States has a clear advantage and will be wise to invest and play on those trends. And let us not forget the huge African diaspora in the United States that stayed connected with the continent. And that's a massive advantage that the United States has. And during this summit, there is a special forum on the diaspora. And that was a very wise move from the Biden administration. When it comes to Russia, frankly, Russia, let's look at where Russia has some interest on the continent. It is with failed states, really. Whether you talk of Mali or maybe Central African Republic, Russia goes where there is fragility, instability. I used to call it vulture diplomacy. I don't consider Russia as a strategic competitor to the United States on the continent. And Russia cannot deliver on the priorities of African countries. And African countries are aware of that. They may play the Russia-China card against the U.S. in some cases, but deep inside, I think the numbers don't lie. Russia doesn't have the capability to help Africans meet their needs, and they are fully aware of that.
Indeed. In some of those countries in which the so-called Wagner Group, which is financed by Russia, is operating, are those very countries that aren't coming because they have not met the criteria. Mali, Burkina Faso, Guinea, they will not be at the summit, if I'm not mistaken. At any rate, I want to also emphasize, you know, in terms of China, and of course, Ambassador Shin knows this, you know, the Belt and Road Initiative. Of course, China does five times more business with the continent than does the United States. But we all know that the United States, you know, the model, I think the Africans, as you said, Joseph Sunny, is more desirable. You have the large diaspora here in the United States, many of whom are entrepreneurs. And from our experience, you know, the United States hires more locally in Africa. They don't bring people like the Chinese do. The United States trains and invests, also conforms to global best practices, anti-corruption and environmental standards. So these are some important differences, and these are the values that you just underscored. David Shin, in terms of, let's just talk very specifically, you know, there are conflicts that we're seeing. We just noted that Ethiopia and the Tigray Liberation Front, you know, signed the ceasefire. Please talk about the importance of the presence of Abiy Ahmed coming from Ethiopia, and to what extent, you know, the peace, the ceasefire, the holding of that ceasefire and other steps that need to follow, whether it's transitional justice, more humanitarian aid, and all kinds of other border agreements, how important that is for this larger strategy between the United States and Africa and the Horn of Africa. And of course, how important the sustainability of this ceasefire is for any type of business, private sector investment to take place in that very important region of the continent.
Well, it's opportune that Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is coming to this summit. I don't know what the nature will be of his bilateral meetings. I'm sure he will have some in Washington, and they will certainly be focused upon the conflict in Ethiopia. So that in and of itself is important. The situation in Tigray is still fragile. The agreement is moving forward, but not without issues and problems, particularly the question of sequencing of Tigrayan disarmament vis-a-vis the removal of Eritrean troops and Amhara militia forces from Tigray region has to be sorted out. And the whole question of delivering humanitarian assistance is slowly being resolved in Tigray, but there still is a lot more to do there. So the fragility of the situation is the key here, and it's critical that all parties, Ethiopian and international community, do whatever they can, and particularly regional countries, do what they can to keep this agreement on track, because it's the last best hope for peace in Ethiopia today.
And let me just continue with you before we close, David Shin. That might be an opportunity also, you know, to, like you said, reinforce the need for that with having all the important AU countries there to facilitate, because they are still playing a very important role in the implementation of the ceasefire. What would you define as a success in terms of the outcome of this conference and the type of follow-up that would be, of course, needed in order for it to be a long-term success in terms of the U.S.-Africa relationship? What would you like to see come from this summit?
Well, if you want to look at statistics and looking, say, 5 years out from now, I would suggest that a growing trend line in terms of U.S.-Africa trade would be one of the indicators. Another would be an increasing trend in U.S. foreign direct investment in Africa. It has been sort of flatlined in recent years, and trade has actually been going down. So it's necessary to reverse that trend line. Aid levels have been holding up quite well. They've been running at $8, $9 billion a year for Africa. A lot of that is humanitarian aid. So that hasn't really been an issue. But it's the question of foreign direct investment and trade that really need to be improved upon. And I think that this summit offers the opportunity to make that happen.
And Joseph Sani, I'm going to give you the last word with regard to anything else you'd like to add regarding what your expectations are for the summit, what you think would constitute a success upon its conclusion, and how you believe it needs to be followed up. Because most people would say that, you know, a one-off and not having another summit for another 8 years, that is not a recipe for enduring partnerships. So how do you see this going forward?
You just hit the nail on his head there. I say number one, the commitment to make this conference a regular event, to push this partnership forward. So 8 years, long time. So if you can have it regularly, that would be a good outcome. Secondly, I think put together a joint working group to make sure that we can track the implementation of some of the commitment and the pledges that will be made. So making sure that we have follow-up mechanism and tracking progress to hold both Africans and the United States accountable their commitments. I think the third outcome I want to see, if possible, is really a commitment to democratize multilateral institutions, to really strengthen them and include African voices, making sure that those institutions work for the benefit of both the United States, but also Africa. So I think those three things, in addition to what Ambassador Shin had, will constitute for me a sign of success for this summit.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for your terrific insights, and we look forward to the summit, its actual taking place, and let's hope that it will continue in concrete ways in the many months and years ahead. On that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Joseph Sani. He's Vice President of the Africa Center at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Ambassador David Shin, former U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.